Hey, everybody. Before we begin the episode today, I wanted to let you know of a few things. One, I'm still open to new opportunities. So if you or your company needs someone to come in and help with any Swift development, BrightDigit is available. Reach out to me, leo@brightdigit.com, or you can go to the website, brightdigit.com, to get more details. Let's set up a time to talk and see how I can help you or your team with whatever project they're working on. So yeah, just let me know, and I would love to help in any way I can. Secondly, I'll be speaking at SwiftCraft. This will be in May. Dates, you can check that out here and on the website. And I will be speaking on learning how to count and being an advanced Swift programmer. So I'll go over some stuff about the history of numbers and mathematics and how it's related to the evolution and complexities of Swift. So I would love to see you there. If you're going to be in the UK, in Kent, come check it out. And then I have been doing a live stream every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 a.m. And I'm hoping to continue to do that as well for the foreseeable future. I've been doing stuff with Bushel and with a new app that I'm working on that I will be revealing soon. So if you are interested in learning what is coming down the line, you could definitely want to check out my live stream. It's on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/brightdigit. It's also on LinkedIn and on Twitter as well. If you like in those live streams and want to test some of these features out, I'm still looking for beta testers for Bushel, and I'd love for you to join and get an exciting look at what you can do in Bushel. So definitely check that out. And lastly, we still have our Patreon. So if you want to get early access to episodes like this, or you want to get access to upcoming articles and drafts and a little bit of the feedback I've been getting from folks, super helpful, reach out to me and let me know. That's about it. So thank you again for joining me for this episode, and I hope you enjoy the rest of it. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Empower Apps. I'm your host, Leo Dion. Today, I am joined by Craig Clayton. Craig, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
You are obviously a prolific YouTuber, amongst other things. I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself.
All right. I wouldn't say prolific, but I'm definitely a YouTuber.
You're more prolific for me, but I guess that puts the bar down pretty low. Yeah.
I've been doing iOS, started in 2010, teaching myself Objective-C. I then got a job working in sports, mostly NBA, NFL, NHL, CHL, MMA, and I did that for 8 years. Once I got out of that, I did a couple of other jobs working mentoring market and just trying to get my feet wet in different things. So I mentor and I do a lot of helping others online when I can, if I see someone ask a question or just struggling, because you never know. I know that when I started, it was very helpful to have someone, which I never did. So my way of giving back and not having someone else go through the same struggles is to try to help others. Besides that, I've written about 4 or 5 books, and three of them were on Storyboard, and then I wrote one on Swift UI. And yeah, there's a ton of them out there from me. It was taken over. Yeah, I've been doing this for a while.
What have you seen as the big change? I assume we're talking like iOS development specifically. What have you seen as like the big change in those 8 years as far as development in that space?
For me, I think the biggest changes is going from Storyboard to Swift UI was the biggest change. The reason why I like Swift UI is probably different than most. Doing a lot of the design work in Storyboard was a little more, it wasn't complicated. Like I didn't have problems with auto layout like everyone else didn't like it. You had some things that it didn't do right, but overall I was able to do anything that I really wanted to. But the problem with the Storyboard was it took forever to prototype. And the biggest thing that I find with Swift UI is within a day or two, I can have a prototype done and ready to go. And so with Storyboard, in a day or two, I might have one view ready.
It's funny you said that, because that's exactly what we said in the last episode with Malin and Kai, was like, it's so easy now to prototype on SwiftUI and just get it out there and get it into people's hands.
Yes.
To see how it actually works. Yeah, for me, I didn't hate storyboards, but for me, it was like dealing with Git conflicts. That was always the biggest pain point for me. Any of that stuff, whether it's like the model data schema or storyboards or Xcode projects, it's like anything I could avoid a Git conflict for, I'll try to do it because that markup is a mess. But yeah, SwiftUI, definitely. I'm not surprised by that answer. Do a lot of people who come to your educational content, do they come to it with a background in storyboards, or are they coming to it from a totally new, fresh perspective where they haven't done any UI development work in Swift?
Most of it is new, and most of it, I would say, is pretty much from the design perspective. So what normally happens is I get the Paul Hudson where they've done some tutorials, they've done that kind of stuff, and now they're looking for the UI part and how to like customize different things. And I think that's pretty much why I focused on why a lot of my video and my content focus on more design, because I'm a rare guy who has design skills that can actually do things visually without needing a designer. Now, I'm not perfect. I don't claim to be, but I feel like most designers, if they see my work, they'll appreciate it and they always have feedback, which is good. And over the last, I think, 10 years, and especially 8 years when I was working with the sports group, in particular, I worked with one designer. His name was Pixel. And he taught me a lot of stuff, just things that he saw. And I learned, okay, these are the things I need to pay attention to. So then when I started working in design, those are the things that I started with. And that knowledge gave me a heads up on just how to handle different layouts in UI.
So your background is mostly software development, and then you picked up design along the way. Okay. Yeah. That's what I was wondering. What do you think are some of the things that folks have a difficult time understanding when they start getting into SwiftUI?
I think SwiftUI stacks are a little confusing for some people when you first get into it because it's a little different. I like to use the CSS analogy to explain the floating and the pushing and the doing of the different things, because I feel like that most people understand somewhat what CSS, how it works. And I think that's a good jumping off point. But overall, I think using stacks, getting used to being able to do different things with them and knowing that you can combine them, overlay them, have backgrounds to them. Like they do so much with those, like basically the three stack modifiers, and then using the background and the overlay, you can literally accomplish any layout you want.
Is there something, do you have a background in CSS at all? Have you done?
I used to do web design and web development before I got into iOS. So yeah, I do.
Okay. What is something you might miss from that world that you wish SwiftUI had?
None. That's why I'm in iOS.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I didn't really, my gripe with web was having to deal with the browsers, having to always constantly figure out. And back then when I did it, there was only like two main ones, and now there's, I don't even know, four or five. And so I just didn't like that. I liked the controlled environment with iOS, and I liked being able to, even when I started, it was just iPhone, iPad, and it was only one. And then now we've gotten like phones and all kinds of stuff. But even then, I still feel like I know what I'm going to do, or I know how to do different things for different devices and not have to stress it.
Yeah, the web is a lot better than it used to be. Even with the four browsers, it's better than having to constantly make sure that your app works in IE7 or God knows what version. But yeah, there's a lot more, and we've seen that slow switch towards responsive. Can you call it responsive design, even though it's one device? But like being able to design for multiple iPhone screen sizes, like that transition definitely happened, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was on the web browser is. When it comes to having to design for different sizes and browsers and what are some things that you wish you knew when you started doing SwiftUI?
Honestly, I was there when they announced it, and I would, within the first day or two, I was playing around with it and I absolutely loved it. I don't know if there was anything that, I guess it was just at that time more resources, because anything that just releases, there's nothing. Just like Vision OS, like I had the same issues with Vision OS. It was just figuring out how to accomplish what I want to accomplish with the new, like going from storyboard to now this whole new thing, but nobody really has anything for me to see. So like right now I'll see some code, like I'll see things on YouTube from different people that I'm like, oh, I didn't think about doing it that way. I can still accomplish it, but I did it in a different way. And now I'm like, okay, I see an alternative way that might be a little bit better. So I feel like there wasn't really anything that it, when it came out, but it was just like figuring out how it worked. And I think my code from SwiftUI day one to now is like drastically different because I made a lot of assumptions just because there was really nothing to really go off of.
I think there's two things when a new API comes out. A, there's a lot of resources. And B, you're not sure if you're crazy or the API is broken 90% of the time. And you're like, and then you go to look for Apple's documentation. It's like nothing. And you're like, wait a second. I thought I did this right. Or they'll skip some like very important part in a WWDC video. And it's, wait, what happened there? Yeah. No, I totally get it. I've had the same thing, VisionOS, SwiftUI, Swift Data recently. So yeah,
yes.
I totally get that. Okay, so let's go over like some tips that you have or hidden gems in SwiftUI that you think people should know about.
All right, so the biggest one that I think Apple started with at the very beginning, and I think it's been lost in the ether, is really small, taking your code and making small views and small components. That is huge, that I pretty much try to recommend to people right away. I think that's the number one. The other one that I find that's useful is code folding. If you don't have code folding enabled in Xcode for SwiftUI, you're doing yourself a disservice because it literally allows me to see which bracket, which stack is containing the code I'm looking for. And I can minimize it and then see other things that I don't like. I can hide things and still be able to see code. So I think code folding and enabling that in Xcode is great.
So that goes to a bigger thing that I would suggest is that breaking your types, your files into as small of a piece as you can possibly do. Like in doing incremental pieces is like one of my biggest like tips for any software developer out there. Like even if it's a one line body, like whatever, I don't even care. Maybe one line's ridiculous. Three lines, four lines, whatever. I like the code folding feature, but I also feel like it's a good smell that maybe you need to break this body up into smaller pieces one way or another. And like what I do sometimes is I'll break it into like properties maybe at first. And then if I see it like to a point where it could go into a separate SwiftUI view, I'll do that as well.
Yeah,
that's a really great tip. I don't see a lot of benefit to having a large SwiftUI view type. Like that's just really difficult to manage.
Yeah, I think there's like this. So right now I'm working in Countdown to Binge in my own app, and there are some files that are big. And it's more because of once I move them into another file, then I have to worry about state and binding and then moving properties. So if I have a model object, then there starts to become like other issues that I don't really want to deal with at that time. So what I'll do is I'll keep it in the file until I've gotten it situated and then I'll move it. So that's when the code folding.
Like I said, it's an incremental thing. Yeah, right, totally.
Exactly. Yeah. So I would say I do the same thing as you. Is I start with, okay, I'm going to move it into a variable, and then I'll use it in my file, but it won't be in the main section of my code. I like to take my body and make content and then use that and then put everything within content variable. So like the main body isn't stacked with a bunch of code. And then as I progress through the project and I start to know, okay, this view is done, then I'll start refactoring into the smaller views and then saying, if I have a view that I really like that I want to reuse, then I'll start creating new views and do it from there. But I always increment. I don't really want to waste time moving stuff if I don't really need to. So I try to stick.
And like you said, if you're especially in that design part, like you don't know, you're going to start. It's like you're going to rip stuff out and change things. So that's obviously not a good time to refactor. So yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I think it's like Xcode 15 where you can start doing like refactor into subview and stuff like that, which like, yeah, that stuff is awesome if you can get it to work.
It's worked from there from time to time, but it is come in handy.
Yeah. You mentioned state and binding. I think to a lot of people, some of those property wrappers and the way the data binding works in Swift UI can be a bit of a mystery. Do you have any like pointers on how they work and how they should be used properly?
I think the easiest thing to do, so with state and then binding, is because now we have bindable, is when you're working with something that's within a view strictly, like the parent, and you want to handle toggles, or you want to handle has someone done something, anything that you're doing within a view that is contained within the view, you would use state and always make it private. I always remember when I was, back when I was learning, I still remember Paul Hudson saying, state variables are always private. State variables are always private. So I always, every time I see one that's not, I'm like, make it private. And then where the binding comes in is when you have a child view that basically you want to have it also listen to a property. So you bind it through to the child. And that is probably the easier portion of like state and binding. When it gets a little more complicated is now we have two different versions where the new iOS 17 version does state and state objects and all of that. And that's where it gets a little bit more confusing in how you work with it. But the right. State and the binding part, I think that is carried over from the previous iOSs. So those are, to me, a little bit easier to grasp. But when you first start, it's a little confusing.
Yeah, state. Yeah, and then on top of it, we have the new observable macro. Have you done anything with that or countdown observable object?
Yes.
It's using observable. Okay, yeah, that's what I've been using, RIP combine. But yeah, I do a lot of observable stuff, and that's changed the way that, and of course, bindable as well, has changed a lot of that to make it so that the line between class and struct used to be a lot more strict, and then now basically you can put a observable object. How do I say this on a podcast? But like the new observation stuff, it doesn't matter if something's a class or a state, whereas it used to matter. That's where you get like state object and stuff. How about as far as like the environment stuff? Have you dealt with any of that where it's like you want to pass an environment? There's an environment object and then there's the environment values.
Yes. Right.
What's
now,
the difference? There's definitely a difference.
So in my app that I'm working on now, I'm using environment and I find it a little easier. So before I used to always have to add the environment modifier and then make sure it was attached to the view. Whereas now you just have to do it in the initial state and then all of the children really do have access to it. And so that's the great thing. Like I find myself writing less code that way. When to use it and like how each one works is a little different, but I think having the observable and not having to do app publish everywhere, that is definitely cleaned up code. And the paradigm has changed. And now instead of doing MVVM, you're really doing model view instead. And so that kind of design pattern and that kind of thinking is where I'm transitioning to, depending on the project and the size of it. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
You want to explain a little bit more about this app, Countdown to Binge? This is an app you want to publish in the actual app store, or is it just a demo teaching tool?
No. So Countdown to Binge came about a few years ago. So I like binge watching. I work from home and I watch shows all the time and I can't stand waiting for a show to go week to week. So pretty much Game of Thrones is the only show I ever will watch week to week and not wait because I can't wait a whole 2 months for that show to end. So the idea is, what I used to do is I'd go to IMDb, find a show I liked, and then it says, oh, it ends in May. And then I'm like, okay, trying to remember May. And then December comes around and I'm like, oh yeah, that show that I wanted to watch back that ended in May is ready to go. And it's about to start a new season. So that is where it derived from. So What Countdown to Binge does is it lets you add shows you watch, and then it will tell you how many days until the show ends. It will also tell you how many days until the show launches. And then the other great thing is any shows that are pending, for example, Daredevil's coming out for Disney, and most people don't know that. But when I was doing like building my app and I added Daredevil, there's the Daredevil from Netflix, and then there's now the Daredevil from Disney. And the Daredevil from Disney has the same characters, but it hasn't gotten a release date specifically. So what my app will do is it checks to make sure, like every couple of days or whatever, it will go and see if there's a date. And then when you open the app and there is one, it'll tell you when the date is for the launch, rather than you having to go look for it every time.
Is this using IMDb?
No, it's using MovieDB, the MovieDB, actually.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did an episode with Casey Liss for Call Sheet, and I think he was using MovieDB or TVDB, something like that.
Yeah, it's probably the same one I'm using.
Yeah. What are you watching right now to watch?
I just finished the really good shows that I finished were Money Heist. Somebody told me to watch that. And then I got into Berlin, which is a spinoff from that. What else am I watching? I'm in a transition. I'm watching some European shows. So I'm watching I can't remember the name of it. It's like a cop show based out of Britain. And I'm in the final season of that. I'm waiting on Masters of Air to finish. So that's coming up in a week, less than a week.
Okay. That's on Max, right?
That is on Apple TV, actually.
Oh, okay. But I was thinking Max because it's like a Band of Brothers type.
Yeah, show. It's more, I think it's based on a true story of the flight. I've seen the trailer, but I didn't want to get into it too much. I'm waiting for it to end, so I should be binging it soon. And there's a couple of other shows that I have on my list, but I try to find shows that I haven't watched at all. I'll go to like old shows that are like 8 or 9 seasons that'll just take me 2-3 months. And then when I'm coding, I'll throw it on and I'll just watch while I'm coding. And that's usually where I get hooked. But I never really was into TV shows until probably maybe 10 years ago.
I was trying to do Sopranos recently. I've never watched it. It's slow, but... Yeah,
Sopranos is good. I got through that after it was over and everybody was talking about how the ending was bad, and I liked it. It is slow. You do have to have some patience with it. Same with The Wire. The Wire took some time for me to get into the first few episodes every season.
And that's like the one. I'm a big Breaking Bad fan, so like I've heard of those shows amongst the greatest shows ever made. So I was always like curious about that. Yeah,
The Wire is epic.
See, yeah, that's what everybody said. I gotta try it again. What did you learn in the making of this app? So you got like API calls. You must have some sort of back. Do you have a back end? And do you have any like local storage?
Yes. Like, so right now I'm using Swift Data. I am hopefully going to integrate CloudKit into it, so that way when you go from device to device, everything is saved. But right now, my focus is really on the core functionality. I've learned a lot. The API actually does not do a really good job of what I'm trying to do. So there's a lot of custom code.
Which API?
The MovieDB. Because it tells me, it's weird. It tells you like the last episode. It tells you the next episode. But that's not really reliable. And then it gives you episodes. And then you have to basically go through the data and find it. So with the strike that happened, I think this is probably the worst year to build this app, or maybe the best year. So with the strike, we have shows that are not being their entire schedule isn't being released when the show's released. For example, The Rookie just came out about three, four weeks ago. They only have 4 episodes that they've actually told people what the dates are. And then there's still maybe 12 more episodes, but they haven't released the dates. So my app has to constantly check to look for updates and then update the timing. So it's a little weird, but it's helpful now because because of this, I'm actually able to write it to where it should work for no matter what the situation is. And it also knows if it's a Netflix show versus a show that's on like ABC or CBS or one of the other ones that are weekly shows. So
I miss the days when they just released the whole entire season.
That is, streaming. And that's the point of this app is not having to.
Swift Data, what'd you think?
It's good. I like it. I'm actually going through an issue right now with a bug that it's not updating and it keeps crashing on me. So as soon as this is over, I'm hoping to fix it. But overall, it's a breeze to use. I haven't really had any major issues other than the one that I'm encountering now. And that's pretty much it. I enjoy it. That obviously, I think it'll, as it grows, it'll get better. But I like it.
Yeah. I think this June, we're going to have a big house cleaning. And
exactly.
That along with the updates for synchronization and stuff. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. By the time this episode comes out, hopefully I'll have published the article I'm working on, Model Actors. Maybe after this recording, I'll share it with you and see if it helps you in your issue. Because that's the one thing I had a hard time with in the Making a Bushel was dealing with synchronization and Swift Data and threads and actors and all that fun stuff. Yeah. But I had said at the beginning of the episode, like storyboards, Xcode projects, any of the core data, like model files, I forgot what those are called, the schema files or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like any of that stuff that was like some special plist XML format that you don't want to have to deal with when you're merging is if I can remove that. So Swift Data, it's like the same thing. It's like core data moving to a purely Swift model or purely Swift format. Just like storyboards move to a purely Swift format, I move to a purely Swift format with Swift UIs. I'm all for it. It's not perfect, but yeah, like you said, it's so much nicer to deal with that stuff in actual Swift as opposed to a UI that you don't want to have to deal with.
For me, so one thing that I did when we did storyboards, I didn't work for a huge team, but it was three of us. It started with two of us, but now it was three of us before I left. Working with storyboards, and we just communicated, hey, I'm going to be doing some major design work in storyboard. And we had it separated so that all of the individual items that were repeated were in nibs. I never put anything in the actual storyboard. Most of the storyboard was blank. So it was more like focused. Do you remember
when storyboards didn't even have like storyboard references and you had to put all the UI in? Oh my God.
Yes. Yeah. That's when it wasn't that one big file and it was like you had to do nibs and do that kind of stuff. That's how I adopted and used storyboarding. Yeah. So it made it easy. But then when they started giving like more features and like doing containers and doing other things, I always found ways to help me, but I always just communicated. I always overwrote anybody that I worked with because I did most of the design work. So if my coworker happened to open a file and we had conflicts, he would take mine and then he would do whatever he needed to do.
It would do the thing too, where it was like, it would change an ID. Like it's like somebody opens the file, right?
Correct.
They don't know what they're doing. They open the file and then they close the file. They didn't do anything. Yep. It just changed some stupid random ID in the file. And then you're like, oh great. Now I have this conflict because the poor guy, like all he did was just open the file. It's not like he meant to change anything.
Happens a ton of times, but whenever we merged code, we always got in a chat and then, if there was a conflict with a storyboard file, my coworker would be like, I'm taking yours. And then he's I didn't do anything. It's just conflicting. Or I changed one thing and I'll go back and just change it when I get the new version. So as long as you communicated, I felt like it worked. We never really had major conflict issues because we always are like, you're working in that file and no one else will touch it.
But it's a black box. That's what I don't like about it. Like, obviously communication is the key, but like, it is a black box. It's like, why would you do this? Why not just make it a format that people can understand?
Agreed.
Yeah. So I was looking over your YouTube channel and there was a few interesting things that you've been talking about recently that people don't know about. Like, for instance, your last video, you were talking about is it content unavailable view?
Correct.
That amongst other, what are some like hidden gems views that people should be using when they're using Swift UI that they just don't know about?
So I think if we're talking iOS 17, we have content unavailable view that's new, tip kit, which is also new. And those are just ways to put in, like, basically an image, text, a title that you can tell a user when your view is in an empty state. For example, if somebody's doing a search in your list and they're looking for a product and the product isn't there, instead of it just being empty, you can just say so-and-so is not found, so the user knows. So content unavailable view just makes it really easy for you to not have to write that. Like, all of us can do it. It's not like it's hard to do them, but when you can write like one line of code to put a content unavailable view into your project and move on, it's great. The other one, Tipkit, I think is really good for the simple fact that if you're trying to educate your users on some icons or some stuff that you want them to know, Tipkit works. And I think once it expands broader than what it's covering right now, then I think it'll be even more powerful. But for now, it's working in most of the things that you would use, but it doesn't do everything. So you have to just be mindful of that for that. Is there anything else inside of SwiftUI iOS 17? I would say those are the two main ones that I can think of. I haven't actually covered Tipkit yet.
Yeah, I tried using Tipkit in Bush Hall, and so it's a macOS app, and it was like, this felt like awkward. And I think maybe I just wasn't using it in the right place at the right time, but I want to get better at onboarding, especially in the app, as complex as it is. It deals with virtual machines and stuff. And if there's anything I could do to alleviate that, Tipkit seemed like the ideal. But yeah, you've done such stuff with searching, correct?
Yes, I've used Content Available View for searching, but Tipkit, I did a whole course. I did a whole course on design, and I cover Tipkit in there. So you can do really good things by, hey, I don't want this tip to show up. For example, let's say you have a detail page for product, and they go to the page, but they may not see the favorites. And you're like, hey, by the fifth view, if they don't mark favorite, show them the tip that, hey, there's favorites that you can favorite your product. So you can customize it down to like how many times you see it. Once they see it, it never comes back, and you don't have to really do user defaults or any of that stuff because it's all built in and it's great. So I think the more people start using it and seeing it in the world and in out and where people can see the code, then they'll start to see the power of it. But I think that was one of those that I had to like really hunt for during the summer when I was trying to integrate it into my course.
How hard is it like to implement, or difficult is it to implement searching in SwiftUI now?
Oh, it's pretty easy. I have a whole video on YouTube that kind of covers it within a few minutes. You basically implement one property, two properties, a modifier, and you just tie in your array, and that's it. You tell it what you're actually going to search for during the array to filter, and that's it. And then you, from the search, you can then integrate content unavailable view. So it all works together. But I would say searching can be done in about 15, 20 minutes into your app.
Is there anything you have done in SwiftUI where you're like, man, I just want to go back to UIKit on this particular piece? Is there anything you miss?
So I would say before the grid stuff really came out, that was pretty much it. But I didn't really miss collection views, because collection views took forever to get going. And I hated the way that they separated the sections. And it was like, is it this one? Is it that one? Okay. And like, I just felt like the amount of work I had to do just to get it up and running never really was worth it. And with SwiftUI, I can immediately see results. Like, once I know if I need a lazy V grid or an H grid or a grid, like the newer ones, I can get it up and running within 5 minutes, and I get feedback. I can work with it. So I would say there's nothing in particular that I miss. I really do. I think maybe because I'm more design heavy, I find that it's, to me, better to use. I didn't like using third-party libraries, and I felt like that was really heavily used in UIKit, but everyone praised UIKit. So I'm like, you're praising UIKit, but then you're using 40 different libraries in your project.
Yeah. Are you a web developer?
Exactly.
Like, come on. I have to do NPM install. Yeah, no, I get it. Totally. Yeah, and it was probably CocoaPods too. So
yes,
yeah.
Or Carthage.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of videos I see about fonts and shapes. Is there anything you want to talk about those subjects? Because those are like, when you get into really like fancy designs, you're going to start implementing custom fonts or custom shapes.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to expand on that?
Sure. I do a lot of custom fonts. I think fonts are great for taking your app to it's not hard. It's just, it gives it a different look and feel.
It's a branding thing, yes, too, right? Like, you don't look like an out-of-the-box app, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I love it. So when we worked with the sports teams, they had particular fonts that they always had. It was their legal team were like, you have to use this font for this thing. And fonts are great. I think the new condensed, compressed, all of those new ones from Apple, even if you just use those, are amazing, because if you combine them with other ones, I like the really thick font, the little condensed thin fonts, you start mixing and matching with those and your app goes from, okay, that looks like a basic app, to, oh, you put some thought into your app. So I think using fonts are great. And I talk about how to integrate custom fonts, and I have a little way to make it so that it's really easy. Just type .custom and then boom, it works. And then you don't have to put everything in strings, because if I want to change a font, let's say I have a regular font that I'm using and it's San Francisco condensed, but then I want to change it to a different condensed font, I don't have to go in and replace all the strings that I did in my entire project. I can just go in, simply replace it in one place, and then my entire font, my entire app is updated. So I find that it's a lot more
useful. Do you do like an extension or something to do that? Like, where you basically, because one of the things I do miss, honestly, from web design is like the ability to say, here's the font for the entire body, here's the font for headers, here's the font, and being able to kind of like with style sheets, just being able to have that better organized. Do you have any tips on that when it comes to Swift UI?
No, but you bring up a good point. So you can do exactly what you just said. So Apple has title. They have header, they have H1, H2, H3. So, right, you can actually make a custom version of that in your app and make it with custom fonts. What I typically do is I'll use a custom font and I'll use a font size. And then based off of the font size, it scales up and down off of accessibility.
Okay.
So when a user changes.
So I just want to make sure this is clear. If you set a font with a custom font, it'll automatically scale.
Mm-hmm.
From accessibility, because I thought there was like, oh no, you have to do this for the dynamic type to work, or you don't have to do anything fancy for that. Okay.
No, if you watch my video, you can integrate it, and it's basically all within the code that I'd share in there. And once you have it integrated, even like my app now and my Countdown to Binge, I have it where it works with accessibility. Now, what's great now with Swift UI is I can do ranges. So I can say that I want this header to be only from small to like extra large. And then once it goes past extra large, it's
clamped.
So it doesn't break my app.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
So you can do it that way. I prefer to do it by the font size. But to go back to what you asked, you can set up a sheet that says my titles are 22. My paragraphs are 14, and then you can just do .paragraph, and then it'll do exactly that. And then again, it'll scale and do everything that you're trying to do. So you can make it, not a sort of, but you can make it behave like a style sheet.
That's awesome. And I'll put a link to your video and maybe even a YouTube card here somewhere, wherever.
I'm going to do one on the one that you just mentioned. I'll do that one next, because I think it's out there, but there's not a lot of resources on it. So I'll post a video on how you can do it by going the other way. Because like I said, for me, I prefer just putting in a number and then let it scale. But if you prefer to put the number in and base it off of an H, like a title one, title two, title three, where it scales down, you can.
So yeah, let's talk. So you're going to be talking at Deep Dish, which is awesome, because I will be there. What are you going to be talking on in Chicago?
So we talked earlier about why I like SwiftUI being prototype, and my particular workflow is different than most devs, where I like to visually see everything before I integrate models, before I integrate APIs, before I do anything. I literally want to see my app running from tab to tab and page to page, just generic, just a basic prototype with nothing, hard-coded everything. And then I go to the testing. And so what I have learned over the last 2 to 3 months with John Reed is that there's actually two different ways of testing. And there's a what we call outside in and inside out. And most devs do inside out, whereas in I, in particular, where I want it to be outside in, and I never really understood this particular concept or even knew about it. And so my talk is, how do you go about doing test-driven development if you do prototype design or development first? And I will give, I still haven't worked on, I started the presentation yet, but the idea will be, you can do stuff like Kiwi and...
What's Kiwi? Man,
the other one. So there's a... It's based off of RSpec for Ruby development, okay. And they made a library for iOS that does the same thing, where it's story-based, behavior-driven development, and it's using Qwik and Qwik and what's the other one? Kiwi, I think, is a Ruby, but yeah, so basically that is where my talk is going to be baseline from. So I'm going to do a BDD version and a TDD version. But I'm going to do it in the flip. Instead of doing inside out, I'm going to show outside in, and then I'm going to show how you use it from that other perspective as well, so that people can see you can do it this way instead of the typical, I'm going to start with my model and then I'm going to put the properties in. To me, I like when I see the design is when I know how I'm going to create my objects and my models and how that works, because the designer really is the one who dictates what you do. And that's the way I think, always worked.
I think that's especially helpful if you have an actual client you're working with. And like for me, when I have a client, like I want them to see what it's going to look like in the end. And like, I think the other side of that comes from the fact that we're not totally comfortable with what's going on underneath. And we might want to see like how what is going on underneath might behave, whether it's networking or database. But as far as like, knowing what you want in the end. Yeah, I totally like that outside in approach. So I'm like really excited to see your talk in Chicago. That's going to be awesome. Yeah. Anything else lately you've been working on? Any Vision Pro stuff or AI?
I did a workshop for TriSwift in New York over the summer, and I learned a ton about Vision Pro and design.
Do you have one? I'm obligated to ask.
I don't have one in the store. I have one that I've done.
No.
But
have
I haven't
a Vision
put
Pro.
One in the store. Okay. Oh no, I'm not. I'm still on the 4K is still a bit much that I want to spend. I plan on getting one, but I'm not. I don't have one yet.
Yeah. What'd you learn in that, like from doing Vision Pro stuff?
A ton. So I learned that Vision Pro is different than anything you're doing in SwiftUI. For iOS, iPad that you're normally used to. So backgrounds are different. The way that you handle colors and overlays are different. The way that you handle state is different. Hmm. The way that you handle fonts are different. So there's a lot that's
why
from
state?
One to the other.
What do you mean by state exactly?
So let's say that you select a button. When you select a button, they like it for it to be in white.
Okay. Visually, but not like
visually.
Data binding.
Yes. Not in the code part of it, but in the visual aspects of it. Sorry, I should have prefaced that. So a lot of the things that I was like trying to figure out is how do I take a design and what is it that, what is the ideal design for Vision Pro? And those were some of the things like you need to use blurred backgrounds. They recommend you don't use solid backgrounds because they want you to be able to see different things in the environment while you're
like
in
a translucent background like that. Yeah. Frosted glass or whatever.
And the buttons that you use all should basically go from there. So I found it very difficult again, like I did when SwiftUI first came out, how do I implement a button with a when it's a state that's like empty, or when it's just, what is it that they call it?
Elected or like not focused.
When there's nothing going on. Yes. When you're not interacting with it, there's that state. Then there's the state when you're actually hovering over it, which is actually when you're looking at it. And so it has a little bit of a glow and a, it like does different things. And those are the things that I didn't, that I was like learning. And it took me hours upon hours how to do modals, how to do
share this was all sheets, in like the simulator. Okay.
Yeah.
What, anything as far as, do you know what Fitt's law is? I was just trying to search what it was called. Do you know what I'm talking about? Fitt's law. Okay. The idea being like your fat finger is not as precise as a mouse cursor, and your eyeball is not as precise as your finger, and so on. Was there anything there that you were like, oh yeah, these buttons need to be a lot bigger, or this button needs to be smaller, or what?
So Apple covers those in the videos. Okay. So I found that those were helpful. But what Apple doesn't cover in detail are the other nuances of them. They cover fonts and they say, hey, our fonts are one step up bigger than what they would be normally in an iPhone app or iPad app. And so that makes sense. And they like bolder fonts because obviously that's easier to read. But like how you handle the state of a button, how you handle the background of them. And when there's when you're on a background that has a blur and then you have another object that's on top of it, how do you handle those different like scenarios? Like all of that they talk about, but then you get into Vision Pro and then you're like, how do I implement it? And that was the problem that I had. I was literally like, okay, I see what you're showing in the demo, but there's no demo project. There's no anything that I can see code with. So I literally, I swear, I hunted for days on just little things. And I, like I said, I just gave a talk on it about a month ago in regards to all of it, like my top five things for Vision Pro.
Awesome. Is that talk available online, or was that
So unfortunately, something happened with Zoom and the, and they are having trouble getting the video. So I'm probably going to have to make a YouTube video of it, because they, right now, they still haven't put it up. It should have gone up like literally the weekend the weekend I did it. And he keeps telling me he's having trouble.
If you find a video or have the video, let me know. I'll try to put it on here. So for sure, that's awesome.
You got it.
Craig, anything else you want to plug before we close up?
I'd probably say my YouTube channel, Design a Swift UI, and then my website, designaswiftui.com, which has courses, and I'm hoping to launch more. I'm working currently on a boot camp, and I'm hoping to eventually do a design vision OS where we go from, we open up Sketch, we create a design, and then we go into Xcode and we implement it, just the design, not like any functionality, but just understanding how to take, like how you take a thought in your head or design and work it into vision.
That is awesome. So
those are my next steps.
Thank you so much, Craig, for coming on. Besides that, where are you online as well?
So Mastodon Twitter is pretty much where you can find me. The Dev Me is my name on both platforms. And I, if you respond to something I say or at me, I always respond, even if it's a thumbs up or a thank you, but I'm always pretty active on there because I know how it is, and it's a really good resource for people to reach out and get help.
Awesome. Craig, thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to seeing you in Chicago. I'm excited for that talk. That's going to be good. People can find me on Twitter at LeoGDion, Mastodon, LeoGDion at C.im. My company is Bright Digit. If you're watching this on YouTube, please and subscribe. I would really appreciate it. Thank you again, and I look forward to talking to you in the next episode. Bye, everyone.